Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Arizona Good Business Radio, featuring leaders in the Arizona business community working to build a lasting impact throughout our state through doing good business. I'm your host, Thomas Barr, Executive Director of Local First Arizona, a statewide organization advocating for and celebrating locally owned businesses. We're the largest local business coalition in North America, providing resources to over 3,000 small businesses and raising awareness about the benefits of building a strong local economy right here in Arizona. I'm super excited today to have a guest, Greg Ross, over at Four Peaks Brewing. If you don't know Four Peaks and you're in Arizona, you've obviously just arrived or been living under a rock the last 20 years. Four Peaks is the most well-known brewery in our state and has taken the name nationally in recent years. And we're super excited to have Greg from the sales and marketing team at Four Peaks. Greg, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you.
Why don't you start by giving us a little bit of a history and background of the company? I mean, I think everybody pretty much knows Four Peaks, but would love to hear a little bit about the story and how the company has come to be where you are today.
Well, that's it's going to be a challenge summarizing 23 years. But, you know, back in the mid-90s, craft beer was just starting to get, you know, launched in Arizona and Metro Phoenix. Andy Ingram, who was the lead brewer at Coyote Springs, which was a pretty cool little craft bar on 20th Street and Camelback. I think there's a Chili's there now. He was brewing some pretty good beers there. And then Jim Scussell and a couple of other partners at the time walked in. They kind of struck up a friendship. They started outlining, you know, what would coming up with their own concept look like. So Jim Scussell was the leader behind the business plan. They launched the company in 1996. Somewhere in between that meeting in 96, Andy, who went to ASU, used to ride his bike up and down 8th Street, reminisced seeing this old dilapidated building that at the time had been vacant for, I think, 9 or 10 years. It had been the home of a Chinese family, had a grocery store there at one time, but it was most notably a creamery with the Borden Company and some previous to that. It was an ice house. There was photography studios in there. So it had a long history. It's just that it was in a pretty dilapidated neighborhood at the time. It was so dilapidated, in fact, that when they went to develop it, the Tempe Fire Department said, "Hey, man, if this thing catches on fire, it's on the no save list." Since then, with sprinklers and everything else, it's definitely on the save list now. They formed the company in 96. It was just a small group of guys. For 2 years, they brewed beer out of a 7-barrel system in the back. There was no, you know, those fermentation tanks that you see there now. There wasn't any of that. There wasn't even a bar or a kitchen. There was a bar, but they... you know, it was just very simple. You know, if you wanted something to eat, you called the takeout guy and they delivered pizzas, but you could drink really, really fresh beer. And at the time, you know, I remember, you know, me as a consumer, you know, in the mid-90s, you know, it was basically Hefeweizen and the amount of craft styles was very, very limited. What Four Peaks did, I think, for at least people like me, you know, broadened our horizons. You know, there was it was called Four Peaks Scottish Amber. You know, Kiltlifter wasn't even named at the time. They had a delicious pale ale called 8th Street, which we still make today. But it was an English style pale. It was delicious. So fast forward to about 5 years ago, demand for Four Peaks was at an all-time high. We were struggling very much to have a full portfolio of beer styles because Kiltlifter was still running about 65% of our business. So there was decisions that had to be made. And in order to be able to offer the consumer, you know, a broader portfolio, it was going to require a lot of money. And so, while I think there's a perception that, you know, the guys that sold the company was doing it to pad their wallet. And certainly that was a benefit, I guess, to them, but it was more to save the company, really. The company was in dire need of major cash infusion to keep up. The guys solicited a few different ideas and offers and decided to go with another brewery, the Anheuser-Busch Company. So 5 years later, you know, things around the pub are very similar. You know, there's still even more on the beer side, even more of a commitment to quality than was before, because, you know, we have labs and we have more scientists and we have more people checking quality control than we've ever had. So what goes out of the brewery technically is as good as it's ever been. So that brings you up to speed.
Yeah, no, you did a great job of doing that in like 3 minutes. So. Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, I mean, elephant in the room, there was a lot of talk when that happened 5 years ago. You know, people were upset or fine with it or whatever. But you can't deny the lasting impact that the brewery has had on booming the craft beer economy and seen throughout Arizona. I mean, I could look at every microbrewery that still exists, and you could almost build, I'm sure somebody has, a link to Four Peaks somehow. You know, I think of Oso and John and you know, mm-hmm. how he came through Four Peaks and all of these different things. And, you know, regardless of however you feel about that transaction, I think that it would be wrong for us to not, you know, recognize what and continue to recognize what Four Peaks has done and continues to do for the Arizona economy and for the Arizona craft brewery scene. How does Four Peaks continue to kind of exist within that ecosystem?
Well, I think you got to look at the way craft beer has evolved in the United States to answer that question. I mean, you look at amazing breweries like Firestone Walker, like Founders, Goose Island. There's some amazing breweries all over the country that have run into the same challenges. You know, you reach a certain point, and then to keep quality and to keep up with demand and to keep innovating, it costs a lot of money. And so, you know, when in the case of Four Peaks, you know, that fell on the shoulders of three or four guys, you know, personally, that's, you know, a decision that I know David Walker and, you know, his partnership, you know, before they went over to Duval Morcott, you know, they had the same issue. You know, how do we do this and how do we achieve our goals in the same way that we want to create a legacy? So do you create a legacy by absorbing 100% of the risk, or do you create a legacy by bringing in a partnership? So what Four Peaks did really isn't that different than what a lot of breweries have done throughout the United States and really around the world. So I think that's the first thing you got to look at. From a local perspective, we recently made a decision to close our pub that we had in Scottsdale. And that was more out of necessity on a real estate type of transaction. The deal and going forward with a commitment in that spot wasn't something that we felt was best for our brand. But even with that, we still employ about 280 people that are all in the state of Arizona. Anheuser-Busch actually, and I'm going to say three now, I think there's only been three people who have come in 5 years from Anheuser-Busch and become employees of Four Peaks. So the core of the employee base has stayed the same. You know, we're still out doing what every other brewery is doing, trying to, you know, put beer in people's mouths and take care of our customers. So yeah, that some has changed, but a lot of it hasn't, I guess is the to summarize.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, obviously we retain our strong connection to the brewery through our partners at Hensley Beverage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, may he rest in peace, the community engagement of Doug Yonko, and his whole team, just a devastating loss this year. But, you know, I think that, you know, by having Four Peaks connected to that distributor, it also, you know, continues your tie to, you know, that local legacy themselves over at Hensley and everything that they're doing for the community.
Yeah, I really appreciate you. I didn't know you were going to bring up Hensley, but I'm really glad that you did. A couple things there. You know, that company, I believe, is now in their 62nd year of being 100% Arizona owned. And it's a tremendous success story. But, you know, and then real quickly on Doug Yonko, you know, when we went to Hensley, which was, we're going on 8 years since Four Peaks went over to Hensley, you know, my phone would ring from Doug every now and then. And you know, I knew when I saw his name on my caller ID that there was some issue. But he went about it in such a way, because we were still a very small brewery at the time, but we were now dealing with a wholesaler that wanted to really blow up our brand. And with that comes challenges. And how are you going about your business? And are you doing it legally? And what are some of the things that you need to avoid to make sure that you stay, you know, in the good graces of the DLLC? And he would never tell us what to do, but he always phrased what he wanted us to do in a question. And I always admired that about him. And he just had a real way with people. And then he was an integral part in Arizona craft brewing history, with playing a huge role behind the scenes in getting the beer bill passed about 5 years ago now, to expand the amount of beer that you could stay as a local brewery in the state. So he not only benefited Four Peaks and Hensley Beverage, but what he did for the entire state of Arizona for craft beer was significant.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to put it. So for those that, you know, have maybe not followed or chose to not follow Four Peaks maybe 5 years ago, or step into the tap room, what are things like on 8th Street these days? I'm a 15-year Tempe residents, and yeah, you know, have spent, you know, a lot of my time biking down that same street, and yeah, you know, it's got such a rich history, as you spoke to, but also it's part of the makeup of the city. And so what's it like in the tap room these days?
Well, if you look up, there are those two windows in the peak of the ceiling that let light in. The bullet holes are still there. We still haven't replaced those from before we took over. That was a pretty rough neighborhood. There's air conditioning now, which, as you remember, going in the summer and watching the condensation drip down your water glass into your lap was not that much fun. So now we have AC. So that's been a big change. We when Rob Wilson decided to move most of his operations for Gin Blossoms away from Uranus Studios, we were able to acquire that. That was such a neat music studio that has, you want to talk about Arizona history, it has a ton of it. And so we had the opportunity to acquire that space, and we made a second bar. We have some merch in that area. But it's kind of a neat thing too, because on the other side, there's a pass-through window for beers for the patio. And then it allowed us to create a patio where it used to be the parking place. So, you know, during those beautiful fall and spring afternoons, you know, there's more patio space, which is pretty cool. You know, but the biggest thing I for me, it goes back to the beer. And, you know, if you look up on those walls, there's about five times as many chalkboards as there used to be with pub beers, seasonal beers, specialty beers. Now we're also creating sour beers and, you know, some funky beers that are way off and sequestered from the rest of the brewery, so bacteria doesn't contaminate the rest of the brewery. But we're just now getting some of those barrel-aged beers up and getting ready to release this winter. December is going to be a huge release month at the pub. An opportunity to really go in and taste some expressions that Melissa Osborne and Jim Roper, Rob Rodriguez, those guys are brewing. And before, we never had that opportunity. So now we do, because we have our production issues taken care of. And now we can let those guys be a little bit more creative. So, you know, we there's a lot of things that I think are benefit the consumer. We have more restrooms. But for me, it goes back to the beer. And there's more beers and quality beers being released than there ever has been in 23 years.
Cool. Yeah. I love it. So, you know, given the times that we're in right now, every business, every restaurant, every bar has been, you know, incredibly impacted by what's going on with the pandemic. You know, I think that our restaurants and bars have been really in the forefront of, you know, what people are thinking about and seeing as far as small businesses and businesses, all businesses in general, and how they're needing to adapt and pivot. So what has that experience been like for Four Peaks over the last 7 months?
You know, the by far and away the worst part of it for us has been watching what it's done to a lot of our friends who own other breweries. The closures have already started, and it's really been brutal. We still have, you know, a lot of friends, like you had pointed out earlier, a lot of former brewers have moved on to other small breweries in Arizona, and watching that struggle has just been terrible. From the retailer standpoint, you know, I'm on the on-premise side, which is bars and restaurants, you know, watching a lot of people that we've had relationships that go way beyond my tenure at Four Peaks, you know, watching their struggles and not just as people, but as providers for their employees, you know, that's been terrible. And then you see sort of how the shift has happened where, you know, people are staying at home more and they're cooking more, which is cool. And they're going to the grocery store and they're buying a lot of beer, which is cool. But, you know, we've always thought of our brewery and as an on-premise brewery first. You know, that to us is where you release new beers, you engage with the public, you get their feedback on the new beers. And then if those beers merit, then you put them in package and sell them in the grocery store. So not having that or having it reduced significantly has been a real pain in the ass. But as I say that, you know, for smaller brewers, it's been five times worse than what we're going through. So, you know, on one hand, I don't want to sound like I'm whining, but on the other hand, it's the entire industry is suffering, not being able to have that engagement in the on-premise. And my hope is, you know, and I think I share Rob Fulmer's, the director of the Arizona Craft Brewers Guild. You know, Rob and I talk and, you know, I don't care if it's a mask. I don't care if it's what it is. We just all need to sacrifice and keep our doors open. And that's the one thing that I don't care if you're a big brewer, a small brewer, or what have you. We have to take care of our hospitality industry and we have to do whatever we can and do whatever it takes to keep the doors open.
Yeah. I'm right there with you on the devastation, seeing our friends and partners throughout Arizona struggle, brewery or non-brewery, and specific to breweries, you know, just seeing the announcement a few weeks ago, Helio Basin closing. Yep. But thankfully, you know, Tombstone's coming in and retaining their staff, and they were able to find a plan that works. But still lost, right? It's still lost for a brewery that was, you know, a great part of the community. And then
we hope Dusty lands somewhere, you know, and he's making really good beers. He started out many years ago with Four Peaks, and he's a great guy, and I enjoyed going in there.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll continue to with Tombstone.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, but let me also throw in one quick thing too. You know, one positive that's come out of this is, you know, I remember in the summer and into the fall, I was doing a lot more Arizona road trips. I haven't been on an airplane since January. So, you know, I've been able to go check out a lot of places that I've lived here my whole life that I've never been to before. I remember a trip to Cottonwood, had a ball, probably visited several local First members, you know, that were there, whether it's in the hotel industry, bars or restaurants. Pine Top went off this summer. So, you know, there's been some good in the sense that I think people woke up that, like me, that sometimes forget how great the state of Arizona is and how there's so much more to see than we sometimes make time for. So that's probably the one positive that for me that came out of this.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, I don't think you can go to downtown Cottonwood and not walk into a local First member
business. That's the stickers are all in the window. Yeah.
Yeah. I think every business down that street's a member of Local First, or if not, they're locally owned anyway. But yeah, totally. And it built an opportunity to visit and spend time, slower time, right? Like with different communities across the state. I took a trip up to Pine and saw the folks at that brewery. And it's just, you forget sometimes how fast the world's moving, and it caused us to take a breath and experience what we have right here for sure.
Oh yeah.
What's coming up next, for Four Peaks? What, you know, looking at the next, I mean, probably the next year, we're going to be in this state of whatever this is, this, you know, pandemic state or whatever you'd call it. What does the next year look like? And then what does the brewery hope to do as we come out of this, and from a growth perspective?
I think the overreaching theme, and I'll go into some of our innovation that we've got coming out next week in a minute, but yeah, I think the overreaching goal of our brewery should be the same for every brewery. And we've got to wave the flag of beer. You know, it's no secret that seltzers have come in and done quite a bit of damage to market share. I do think that the consumer wants variety. Obviously, that they've told us that with all the different, we call them FMBs, flavored malt beverages that are out there now. There's not room for all of them. But the ones that I think that the consumer gravitates to will be the ones that succeed. And then there are going to be other ones that probably fall off. So I think we have to continue to wave the flag of beer. And with that, we've got to come up with lower calorie options. You know, we're constantly looking into gluten-free options. It sounds easy, but it's not, to maintain that kind of flavor and have a gluten-free. The people that are doing it are doing a pretty good job, Omission being one of them. We're not quite there yet as an industry. So I think we have to, brewers have to be really innovative, but at the same time, listen to what the consumer wants. So some of the things that we've got, our Hazy IPA, which we launched just recently, will be coming out in 12-pack cans next year. It's a delicious IPA that is made with several experimental hops, really refreshing. So that has just been a bottle and a draft play, but that's going to come out in cans. So that'll be kind of cool. Let's see. We've got our Wow Wheat. So we had a delicious white ale that was, I think, a very traditional Belgian style whip. But sales kind of were flat for quite a while. What we're trying to do now is to replace that with another wheat style beer that's got some oranges grown in orange peel from Greenfield Farms in Mesa. So I think that's going to be, you know, something with a local spin that is very refreshing. It's just being released now. And we partnered up with the Joy Bus Cafe, which is over on the 51 in Shea. And what they do is they, the folks that started the Joy Bus are all restaurateurs and chefs. So what they do is they create healthy meals and then deliver them to homebound cancer patients who can't quite get to the store. They're going through chemo or radiation. So pretty dynamic team over there. So we're partnering with them and we're doing a charitable donation based on case sales every year to help keep their mission going. But they're fun. Like even last Friday, we took Jennifer, the founder, and Lisa, her right-hand gal, and they made sales calls with us and told our retailers the story about what they're trying to do with every, you know, sale that, you know, bars and restaurants make. You know, a piece of that is going to go back to the Joy Bus and help people within our community. So look for the Wow Wheat, still tongue-tied with saying that, but that's going to come out in bottles as well as eventually in cans and draft. So that's a big one for us as well. We put solar panels actually on the entire roof of our Wilson brewery. And so we're experimenting with a seltzer that is going to be powered with solar powered energy. We think it's one of the first, if not the first, to try to do that. So we're experimenting with that and we'll see, you know, that's tentatively planned for 2021. We've got a really easy drinking beer called a Desert Day Drinker that's coming out. That's meant to be very, very low in alcohol, hopefully lower in calories, that are going to come and give the consumer, you know, another lighter beer option for our, you know, desert climate. So there's always a lot brewing. I'm really excited to see these barrel aged pub beers and these sours that are coming out. You know, we keep asking Melissa when, and her answer is the same: when the beer's ready. So I don't have any more to tell you than that, but it's kind of a running joke at our brewery.
Love it. Love it. Well, that's exciting to hear the innovation, you know, behind, I mean, just the business perspective. I mean, I don't even think about it, but you're right. The whole seltzer, I've never even tried a seltzer, and but I see, I mean, I know it's everywhere and I know that people are drinking it. And so thinking about how a brewery can innovate and should innovate with those changes in the market is super interesting. But love to hear that you guys are still so plugged in, tied to the community. The stuff with Joybus is awesome. And I'm sure it's having a huge impact on that organization and the work they do.
It's really, really a fun partnership. It really reminds me, I've been with a company, next year will be my 9th year. But you know, I'm still the new kid on the block. You know, most of the people that I work with have been with the company for upwards of 15, 18. I know, you know, John Schmidt, you know, John's worked really close with Local First for a long time. Ted Golden, you know, we all look at this Joybus project, and it sort of reminds us of, you know, what things were 5, 10, 15 years ago with trying to find alignments and ways to engage different consumers. And cause marketing is one way to do it. You know, there are other ways as well, but this will be a really fun project.
Well, love it. Well, Greg, thank you for taking the time, giving our listeners and the community an update on what's going on in the Four Peaks world. Any final thoughts to leave people with?
Just when is Kimber Lanning going to run for office? You know, that's the big question.
That's a big question.
I love that.
I don't have an answer.
we really do appreciate. Well, here, I'll tell you an anecdote real quick. The day, it was December 18th, I remember the day that our acquisition was announced. And a few of us on the sales side spent the entire 2 or 3 days on the phone explaining what was going on. My first phone call was to Kimber because I knew that it was only a matter of seconds before she saw the press release. And, you know, wanted to tell her that we're going to do whatever we can to still remain aligned. Although we are technically not 100% owned, our relationship with Hensley Beverage is going to be as strong as ever. We are going to commit to, you know, doing things that benefit Local First as much as we possibly can. And we still want to stay active with that. So after a short pause on the other line, I think she appreciates that. And we really appreciate you guys reaching out to us and giving us the opportunity to tell our story.
Absolutely. Yeah. And thanks for sharing that. I actually remember when Kimber told me, and she was just like, they said that I was one of their first calls and,
the first, you know, call.
We're gonna, yeah. And, I remember her saying something about, well, let's hope that as they take the brand national, they shine a bright light on Arizona while they do it, because I think there's a big difference in going through something like that and, you know, quote unquote, selling out and staying committed to who you are and your roots. And I think that we're all proud that Four Peaks is continuing to do that. And it's evidence.
Well, we're going to keep trying for sure.
Cool. Well, thanks, Greg, for being here. I hope everybody enjoyed the conversation today. And you were inspired by listening to a local business working to leave a legacy right here in Arizona through doing good business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Phoenix Business Radio X, for hosting us, Four Peaks for sharing, and all of our legacy partners at Local First, including Hensley Beverage, great, great partners. This is Thomas Barr from Local First Arizona, reminding you that if we want to build a better state, we need to connect deeply with the local businesses that make us proud to call this place our home.